Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Nicole Sachs. She is author of The Meaning of Truth, Embrace Your Truth, Create Your Life. Nicole began her career as a psychotherapist at the age of 12, sitting among her middle school colleagues and holding court as a resident shrink. That is to say that this work is in her blood. Her passionate desire to become a mother and create a large and joyous family was equally ingrained. Nicole holds fast to the conviction that living as a connected wife and present parent have contributed as much or more to her work than her many years of education. The Meaning of Truth, Nicole's first book, is the culmination of an infinite number of life stories which she has lived, heard, and experienced, and the result is a revolutionary theory of healing with limitless power to transform and lift any life it touches. Nicole likes to explain her book in simplest terms when people approach her from any and all backgrounds and ask, "So what's your book about?" Her first answer is consistently you. Although Nicole loathes the label, she hauntingly admits, quote, "The Meaning of Truth is a self-help book, as there are no other categories which seem to more readily fit. Yet it is incredibly different from any of the other self-help crap you've ever seen. It's raw and compelling because it's my humanity on the page and yours as well, if you allow it. The life you save is your own." So for more information about Nicole, her blog, her book, you can visit her webpage, which is meaningoftruthbook.com. And again, that's meaningoftruthbook.com. And I do have a direct link in the show page description to Nicole's website. So with that, I'd like to welcome Nicole to the show. Hey, Nicole.
Hey, Robert. Thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure, and I know this is going to be a fun conversation from reading what I have of your book. So, just to let everybody know, we're just going to have a wonderful upfront and frank and candid conversation about the truth. So, Nicole, before we start, you know, I usually like to have the guests give a little bit of a background about themselves, and I did mention in the introduction that age 12 you had that little shrink going on with your middle school colleagues there.
Yeah.
But I did, when I was reading in the introduction of your book, there was a point early in your life where you were told by the medical profession that you wouldn't be able to achieve many of your dreams.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, and I really think that just from reading that, to me it seems like that may have been a seed that was the root of you going after everything that you want. I don't know if you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but it seems to me
Robert, you're absolutely right. The limitations that were kind of professed to me at a very young age were a huge impetus for all the things I've achieved, for sure.
So if you wouldn't mind sharing, a little bit, because obviously there were medical limitations and things in healing that you had to go through, and from what I understand, what you went through has become a major part of the process that you use to help others through healing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, and I'm certainly happy to discuss it. So, to answer your question on point, basically, when I was 19, which means I was only a freshman in college, I was diagnosed with a condition called spondylolisthesis. I say it slowly because people don't always know what it is. They haven't always heard of it. But essentially what it means is that the lower vertebrae of my spine show stress fractures, and one of my vertebrae is completely shattered and replaced with scar tissue. And I received this news after having kind of what I call an acute incident. I was at college. This is all, you know, detailed in the book, but I was at college. It was my freshman year. It was a stressful time. And I became disabled with back pain, which, you know, as a 19-year-old, it's very young on the scale of people who usually say my aching back. And I actually had to go home from college about a week or two before I meant to for Christmas break in order to have MRIs, x-rays, tests, so we could figure out what was wrong with me. And the diagnosis ended up being spondylolisthesis, which I still have. And it, according to the orthopedic surgeon that examined me, would require spinal fusion surgery, which is a very extreme surgery. It requires 6 weeks in a body cast, or at least at the time. I'm 42 now. I was 19 then, so at least at the time. That was the technology. And my doctor even said, you don't need to do this yet, but you're never going to live to 40, and you're not going to be able to carry a child to term without doing this. Like, you know, this is not something that's optional in your life. I'm going to give you a moment to respond to that. I feel like I'm so used to this story that sometimes I just tell it, but I think that people probably react because they don't, like, people can probably understand how devastating it would be to be told at 19 that you have this many limitations, right?
Yeah, I mean, to me, see, you know, at that particular age, I mean, that's, you know, when you're starting college, you know, that's the time in your life when you're usually the most optimistic. You know, you're kind of, you venture out. I mean, you're starting this brand new experience. You know, a lot of times in college when you start, you don't know where your life is going to take you, you know, but that's part of the magic of that time period is that, you know, life is full of possibility, you know, but here it sounds like, you know, you immediately are kind of eliminated from so much of life's possibilities, you know, and it sounded like that, you know, the idea of having a family was very important to you, so that would have been an additional disappointment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in addition to that doctor telling me that I would probably not be capable of carrying a child to term without significant bed rest and possibly it being impossible, he also told me I shouldn't rollerblade, ski, drive in cars for more than an hour because the bumpiness would be disruptive to my spine. I couldn't sleep on my back or my stomach, only on my side in the fetal position with the proper pillows. I mean, the whole thing was kind of surreal to me as a 19-year-old, honestly, because I was a kind of what you might call a really polite, defiant kid. I was defiant in that I didn't feel like the rules of the world had to apply to me, but I was polite in that I never misbehaved and I always got straight A's. So, like, you know, I had that middle ground. But I think that there was something that was awakened in me when I received such a devastating blow that said, okay, either you're going to buy into this and you're going to just, you know, cash in your chips and this is your life, or you're going to see if you can find a different way to thrive. And I think that was what started this passion in me to figure out other ways to be well, which, you know, have basically, you know, evolved my life.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that, I mean, when I read that, to me it just seemed like that was a pivotal time and an experience that really kind of directed your path, you know. And and by the way, folks, before we go on any further, you have given birth to several children. Correct?
Yeah. Oh, so. No. Yeah, exactly. That's important. Yeah. Yes. So I have three beautiful biological children. I exercised until the day before they were born. My oldest daughter will be 12 this month. My middle son will be just was 10, and my youngest daughter is a first grader. She's 6, and they are healthy, and I carried them all the term. So the doctors were wrong. And here's the thing. I always struggle because I do not want to go against the medical community because I'm not like that. I'm seriously really open to anything that people have to say about healing because healing is the important part. Being true to ourselves and being able to live our fullest lives is the only part that matters. So if it happens through the medical community, if it happens through the holistic community, if it happens through the psychodynamic community, which I'm a part of, it's all important and it's all fine. I never want people to feel shame about anything because shame will only perpetuate pain.
Yeah, yeah, very, very much so. And one of the things that, you know, I liked when I read about your practice, your psychotherapy practice, is that you aren't afraid to put yourself out there. I mean, let's kind of maybe go back with the book, The Meaning of Truth. When you decided to go back to the time when you decided that you were going to write this book, you know, and you're going to kind of put it out there. And I mean, it's your story in many ways, but it's also much more than that. What was your inspiration? What was it that told you that I do need to write this book and to write it in a very candid, very straightforward, no bull approach?
Okay, well, thank you. That's an awesome question. Here's the thing. I have been in the world of psychotherapy since I was born. Having said that, it's because my mother is an MSW, and she and I always had a constant dialogue about, you know, not just what was going on the surface, but what are you really feeling? And it was really helpful for me as a child because I had a bit of a tumultuous experience as a kid. I moved a lot. I'm an only child, and we didn't have a lot of money. And so that kind of situation always fueled me. You know, it's like, okay, well, maybe things aren't fabulous this moment, but they can be. And let's talk about how you're really feeling, and let's get past it so we don't have to, like, dwell on it, that kind of thing. And so as I got older, that has always been my mantra. And I think that the reason that I published this book is because once I decided to go into private practice solely and to develop the practice that I've developed, which is a beautiful, and I always say this on every interview I give, I applaud my brave and beautiful clients because they come in here every week, and I also see a lot of people remotely because my practice is very specialized in terms of helping people with chronic pain and conditions. So I see people over FaceTime and Skype, but we're always so connected, and I'm always right there with them. And I think that the problem with therapy in our kind of the way we've evolved it is that the therapist sometimes sits in a situation where even if the therapist doesn't mean it, it's the dichotomy of the therapist is strong and fine, and there's nothing wrong with that person, and then the weak client enters who's struggling, and that person's going to heal them. And maybe in medical, you know, doctordom, that works, right? Because they can prescribe you a drug, or they can give you a surgery, or they can give you a shot. But with psychotherapy, what I've learned and what I've seen to be the most dramatic and tremendous healing tool that I have ever encountered is that I lay myself out with them. I say, I'm hurting too. I say, I'm a human being. You're a human being. This is what it's like to be a human being. It hurts. It's hard. We suffer, but we can get through it. And I'm gonna take your hand. Let's do it together. And when I say that to people, I watch them transform. It's amazing. I watch people go from either defensive or panicked or, you know, unresponsive to, you know, and it depends on their issues, how long it takes them to trust. But I watch them say, all right, okay, you're going to come with me, then I can do it. And I think we can all relate to that concept.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And you're right. I didn't follow through with the psychotherapy, but I had my schooling was in psychology, and of course all of my professors, were practicing therapists. And you're right, every single one took the approach of sitting behind the desk and coming from a
right.
position of authority. And when in fact I knew, there was just a whole lot of other stuff going on, with them. And,
right. Yeah.
And
you know.
I was like, wait a minute, who are you trying to kid? I know exactly what's going on, So, I mean, it's like you became a therapist for a good reason. You wanted to find out what was going on with you. Yeah. So, so anyway, I recognize that. And it's really a novel approach in the sense that there, right now the industry doesn't really, I don't think, really embrace that aspect when in fact, really they could do, a whole lot better job if they do recognize and let their clients know that, hey, I am human too. I go through the same things. Matter of fact, I've already gone through it, so I can help you, because I've done it and I've gone through
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, Robert, exactly. And what I want to say is this is a very important thing for me to say in terms of having this exact conversation, because I always want people to understand when I'm sitting here being real with my clients, and when I say here, it's because I actually am sitting in my office as I speak here. There's nothing about that conversation ever, and we can do that in gaps, E-V-E-R, ever, that has to do with me solving my problems through them. And I think that's where, as a psychodynamic community, we suffer, because therapists are scared to blur the boundaries. We don't want to think that anything about our work involves self-serving, involves us healing through the pain of our patients. It would be unethical, and I would never do it. So I find it important to just say that even though I'll lay myself on the line, it's always, always in the exact pointed, thought-out therapeutic direction of what my client needs. In the medical jargon, we always say, the first thing we do is seek to do no harm. In the therapeutic community, there isn't necessarily such a mantra, but I go by that mantra, which is I'm not going to try to solve my problem ever by talking to my client. I can do that with my own therapist. I can do that with my friends, with my wife, with my trusted people. But what I do is I say, hey, guess what? I'm human too. Hey, guess what? I was debilitated with back pain. Hey, I have children. It's okay. I understand what it's like to be a mom or a dad. Or I understand what it's like to grow up with money woes. Yeah, that was a big part of my life. And as soon as people hear that, I watch them physically relax. It's like they don't have to carry that shame anymore. They don't have to say, I'm the only one that has this terrible, embarrassing problem that, my dad was out of work or that I felt scared or I felt ostracized. I say, oh, yeah, I get that. And sometimes I tell a short story. I remember in seventh grade when blah. But it's always specifically pointed toward the problem my client is facing, because that's important. And I want to say that because I do feel like I'm a trailblazer in this kind of therapy, but it's not, a brain dump of your own problems. I mean, it has to be professional.
Yeah, but, and I understand what you're saying. So, by exposing yourself as far as having an experience that the client can relate to, it really fosters a sense of empathy. They recognize that you, can feel them, as far as, what it is that you're, yeah. And, I can see where sometimes there may be a fine line, between, it's not a dump, as far as relating
right.
issues, but
a vent
right.
session between girlfriends. Like, this is, I am a therapist.
Right.
I am professionally
right.
here to help you. But and I write about this in my book in one of the earlier chapters, but one of the things that most inspired me very early on in my career when I was younger than I am now and definitely playing, I don't mean by the rules, but, you know, more by the classic psychodynamic training, which I received, and I received excellent training, which was that I would like, you know, for example, I don't want to go too crazy. Do you want me to give examples or should we move on?
Yes, absolutely. Please give examples. I think that's great. Really helps. I think the listeners really get a good handle of the discussion and the points you want to make.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that was okay. So when I was in my training and my internship, and I was studying at that point at the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, I worked at a wonderful place, but there was a situation where I was an intern, which meant that clients could come into this clinic and they could see me for a very nominal fee because I was learning and they were aware of that. You know, not just I, there was a bunch of us. And what happened was I had a client who was a young woman, somewhere between the ages of 19 and 22, if I recall, and she had been horrendously abused. And she was very raw and vulnerable. And at the end of one of our sessions, she asked me for a hug. And I didn't see anything wrong with it, and I gave her a hug. She really appreciated it. She went home. And when I went into group supervision, I was essentially burned at the stake for giving this woman a hug. Meanwhile, not only was she not even a woman, she was so abused that her mental age was probably about 10 or 11, and she needed a hug. You know, as we said, you know, I'm not scared of colorful language. She needed a fucking hug. and it was like, you know, whatever. And what happened was my supervisors, and I don't blame them at all. I never want to blame them because they were wonderful supervisors. But they said, instead of giving her a hug, why don't you ask her what that would mean to her to have a hug from you? And I understand that. I really do. I understand psychodynamic training very well.
Mm-hmm.
So the next week she walked in, and we talked like we always did. And towards the end, she said, may I have a hug? And I said, let's sit down for one more moment. I just have a question. And she said, yes. And I said, what would it mean to you to have this hug for me? And she kind of got a little upset, not terribly, but she said, I don't know, like, kind of just thought after we said all that crazy stuff, you know, might be nice to have a hug. And I said to myself, fuck it, give her a goddamn hug. So I hugged her, and she left. And then I went back into my supervision, and I lied about it because I was too scared to tell them. She's just a human being. The goddamn girl needs a hug. Like, it's not like I'm, you know, sexually abusing her. Like, this is crazy. Why do we have to be so removed from these people? Let us be part of their lives. Let us heal them by showing they're not alone. And I will tell you, it made a huge difference for me because I understood that humanity is as important as all these psychodynamic rules we have as long as we use it with great care. And I did.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, truly, that is a very good story because, you know, as you were going through and when you talked about the supervisors in the comments, and, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, irritated me, you know, when I went through and that whole idea. It was like there, to me, the idea of asking someone what would the hug mean to you, the difference between that and just a contact of a hug. I mean, it's a hug.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
it's
hug,
like, you know.
It wasn't like
you
were racing for hours. It was like, you know,
right,
contact,
exactly.
Exactly.
I mean, and it's, you know, and see, for someone who was physically abused to ask for a physical contact had to have been a milestone, you know, really, when you think about
absolutely.
It, you know.
Huge for her.
You know,
it was huge.
Yeah,
trust.
Exactly. And then, you know, to take an approach of instead of providing that little bit of, you know, contact, you know, very innocent, you know, very type of physical contact versus keeping it away from her. I mean, to me, it was like
shaming her for asking for it.
Yeah, I mean, it, to me, it's that would be like so contrary to her healing. You know what I mean? So.
Well, you know what?
Anyway.
I love that you said that, because sometimes I really do feel alone in this practitioner world. Like, I feel like people don't get it. And like I said, I don't take it to the nth degree. And sometimes, I mean, 99% of the time when people are asking for that quote-unquote hug, they don't want physical contact. What they want is, tell me you get it. Just tell me for 1 second you understand what it's like for me when I walk out of this office and I have to walk into my life. And if I have the capacity to be honest and say, hey, guess what? I get it. I have kids I'm going home to after work. Don't stress it. We're all in it together. When I watch the transformative healing from that kind of simple human connection, I'll never stop. I'm not going to not do that for people, because it's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of takes the whole idea of, you know, psychodynamics to a new level. I mean, it's so much more compassionate, you know, than the standoffish, you know, trying to analyze, you know, in the thing with, you know, the idea of even the demonstration of a hug, you know, why does it even have to be analyzed? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you, Robert. I'm right there with you, buddy.
yeah. So, oh goodness. Okay. Well, we're almost down to halftime for a break. So before we do, though, I want to kind of have one more question. But I do want to invite anyone who's listening, if you would like to call in and ask Nicole any questions, feel free to call in. The number is 619-789-4359. Also, if you're listening in the chat room and would like for me to pose a question to Nicole, feel free to type it in, and I'll be sure to do that. Okay, just one question before we go to break, and that is – the truth. The title of your book is The Meaning of Truth. Now, I'm not going to try and do, you know, what the dictionary says about that, because I know how you feel about dictionary definitions from reading the book. So if you wouldn't mind, though, why, you know, what is it, you know, why the truth? I mean, you know, isn't everyone's truth different? Okay.
All right.
So why the truth?
Robert, that's an excellent question, and I can answer that. So in my belief, truth exists on two levels. The first level, and I usually do this for my clients by holding my arm up in perpendicular fashion and walking my two little fingers over my arm, which is, there's our daily truth, which is, you know, example, I'm tired when I get up in the morning, my children stress me, or I don't have children but I'm expected at my job, my boss is overbearing, or I don't make enough money to pay my mortgage, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we all have our truths. That's the stuff that we deal with on a daily basis. But then there's a deeper truth. There's a deeper truth that isn't the meaning in the dictionary. And that's what, it's not going to be possible, obviously, for me to convey this in a couple minutes in an interview, but that's why I really encourage people to reach out and read the book, because I can speak to every single one of you. Nobody is exempt. We all have a deeper truth, and our deeper truths are impolite. Our deeper truths are dark and raw, and they're not always, quote, unquote, true for us on the daily level. And the example I always give, which one day I'm going to have to sit down with her and explain, she's going into seventh grade, is the day I realized that I hated, I'm using the word, I'm going to repeat, that I hated my daughter. And it was a horrible day for me. She was only 3 years old. I already had another son. He was one. They're 22 months apart. And this baby, my little beloved baby, who is truly, and I'm not saying that to defend myself, my best friend in the world, my seventh grade beauty daughter, my lovey firstborn, is my best friend in the world, but she wasn't what I asked for. She had curly blonde hair. I have straight black hair. She looked exactly like my husband. She was crying in my face for months. She didn't open her arms to love me, and I was devastated. I didn't know it at the time because my search of truth, like I said, was I'm tired. I'm a new parent. This is a lot to deal with. You know, I'm only 30 years old. You know, my husband is working all the time. I have all the responsibility. Yes. And there's nothing about that that wasn't the truth. But the meaning of truth that I like to help people, I invite people to embrace in their lives is there's a deeper truth to things when we know we don't feel okay. When we're hurting physically, when we're having psychosomatic issues, whether they be irritable bowel, migraines, neck, shoulder, back pain, burning upon urination. I mean, I have clients who have every symptom in the book. Once we can come to terms with our deeper truths, that is something that is ultimately healing. And what I'll say is, I needed to say it out loud. I didn't at the time say it to anyone. I didn't say it to a friend, my husband, my mother, anyone. I said it to myself in a journal. I wrote it down and I said, I hate her. Why do I hate a baby? What the fuck is wrong with me? And what I realized in that moment, which what became the catalyst to so much of my healing is I didn't hate her. I didn't hate a baby. I was just devastated from the years of my princess fantasies in my head that my childhood was very hard. When I had a baby, she was going to look up at me with loving eyes, and we were going to be a team, and it was going to be you and me forever. And then I get, you know, like, it's, life is not what we expect. But as soon, and this is the most healing thing, and the one thing, if I have one thing I want to leave this interview with your listeners, is this. As soon as I got it, as soon as I said out loud that disgusting, horrible thing to say, which is I hate my baby, I realized I don't hate my baby. I hate the fucking expectations that I've carried around for however many years, and plus being told by a doctor I'd never even have a baby, that, like, this is going to be what it's like. But it's not that. She's a human being. She's just a bunch of DNA. That's not all me. And she needs to work it out for herself, and she needs a good, loving, accepting parent in order for her to come full circle to be who she is. And the moment I got that, and the moment I worked out that it was my misconception of my expectations that created that feeling called hate, all that feeling evaporated into the air. It was like it never happened. And I became able to be the parent that she always needed. And now she's going into seventh grade, and I say this with the most pride. She gets, I don't care about this necessarily, but she has straight A's in school. She has a million friends. She walks around with a smile on her face. She's completely self-confident. I'm not worried that she's going to do dangerous things like drink and drive or take drugs or have unprotected sex because we talk about it, and she listens and loves me. But it's because I didn't work out my issues through her. I figured it out. I dealt with myself. And I allow her to be the human being that she is. And that is so important. And I don't know if there's, like, a way to do that so quick, but sorry. Is that too much?
No, that's great. No, as a matter of fact, I had written down one of the things to make note of is, you know, when I read in your book, there was a comment about that the deeper truths can be ugly, shameful, and dark until they're unmasked and revealed, you know, and that's exactly,
yeah.
You know, what that story conveys. And, you know, that to me, that was, you know, it was very important, you know, that I felt that we really wanted to get that message out for people who are out there right now who maybe aren't taking that close look at themselves or trying to hide, you know, that little aspect, like you say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Robert, if I can say, and I want everyone to hear this who's listening, even if you're half listening while you're looking at your baby and wanting to hate them, everyone feels this way sometimes. Everyone feels this way. Parenting sucks. It's so hard. Being completely responsible for another human being, and you have to work a job, and you have to make enough money, or let's say you're way wealthy and you have zillions of dollars, I don't care. You're still looking at that person as if I need to be the best I can be for that person. And when we feel incapable of, you know, kind of delivering that, what we do is we get angry. What we do is we get mean and withholding. And I watch it every day in the park. I watch it every day in my practice as I gently help people change their perspectives on parenting. And so I just think it's really an important dialogue.
Yeah, I agree. Gosh, we're going to take a quick break here for about 2 minutes. So, again, anyone, if you want to call in and ask Nicole any questions, feel free to call in. And then when we return, Nicole, I'd like to, you know, talk a little bit more about truth. You talk about, you know, truth without judgment. You know, that's an important aspect. And I do also notice in your book that you have something called journal speak, and that's something Great, I want to explore that with listeners. So everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
Hi, I'm Roy Worley, and I'd like to talk a little bit about Robert Sharpe's thought-provoking and insightful book, Joy Potential. I've personally witnessed a wellspring of people who have responded to share their personal experience as to how reading Joy Potential affected them and their life in a very positive way. It's been interesting also to see how different parts of the book really impact people at different levels of their consciousness. So if you have not read and then reread Joy Potential, get your copy today.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and I guess derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving and ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential because as I just in the first few pages began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone, and with that I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us. Again, thanks to Roy and Maya for those testimonials. And also do everyone to know that my second book, which is called It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, is available in a PDF form and also in from Lulu as an e-published format. It will be coming soon to Nook and Amazon. And so you can always go to biteradio.me, click on books, and I have all my information there. Okay, back to today's show. Again, my very special guest is Nicole Sachs. She is author of The Meaning of Truth, Embrace Your Truth, Create Your Life. Again, you can find out more about her book, her blog, and everything else by visiting her website, which is meaningoftruthbook.com, meaningoftruthbook.com. And again, I do have a direct link to Nicole's website in the show page description. And with that, we're back. Nicole?
Thank you, Robert. I want to say I was inspired by those testimonials in the break, and I'm going to pick up your book as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I have to – this is funny. You know, when I read your book, your fresh, no-crap approach. That's exactly what I did with my spirituality bites. It was like, we have all of this, stuff going on, but I'm not a guru. I'm not any of this. I just happen to read a lot of books and have a lot of wonderful guests who have gone through some stuff, and here's some actions that I've taken to make my life better. If you want to do it, great. If you don't, that's fine. It's up to you. But
lovely. That's so lovely. You know what, Robert? I think a lot of people want to.
Yeah, it was, and it's really interesting. It's a real small thing. It's only like 90 pages or something like that. But I list, different actions that I've taken, and I'm just so delighted. I've had a few people who have written to me already that have, done certain things. Like one of the areas is raising awareness, and a suggest, basically awareness is where it starts. Everything starts, any change. And a woman read that, and her life was in the craps. It's like everything has gone to hell in a handbasket for her. But and she's got two autistic twins. But anyway, despite all of that, after reading the book, she decided to volunteer for Special Olympics, recognizing that, maybe an increased awareness will not only help her, but maybe also help her twins. So to me, that was like, yay, that's exactly what I hoped, people would do. So, but...
Well, I think that's wonderful, and I'm serious. I mean, I was very inspired by that, and I'm definitely going to look into your work. It seems to really be a really good fit for mine as well.
Thanks. Yeah, great. Okay, well, let's go on to talk a little bit more about truth. One of the areas that you talk about in your book that I really think is a key for people to look at the truth, their truth, and all of its shape, and good and, maybe not as good types, is the idea of judgment.
The good, bad, and ugly, yes.
Good, bad, and ugly is judgment, so if you wouldn't mind explaining to the listeners how, you approach your clients when talking about the truth of themselves, and how judgment plays into the success or not of treatment?
Okay, well, that's a really great question. I think that if we're looking at the word judgment, and so if we get very quiet, we don't have all of our parents or our peers or our bosses' voices in our heads, and we just say judgment, what does it mean? What it means to me is a stop sign. What it means to me is we're not going to be able to speak or be true to ourselves because we're scared that somebody is going to disapprove. And I was raised by a very strict father who disapproved most of the time. So I am really attuned to that feeling. And so when we talk about judgment in the, cohabitation with truth, it's so important for us to say to ourselves, the deeper healing doesn't come until we're not polite, until we're not the little boy or girl being seen, not heard, until we're not that kid with our hands folded in our laps, secretly seething. And I think too many of us, even at our age, and when I say our, I mean my, my generation, which is I have young children, my mother is still living. Unfortunately, my father passed when I was young, but what I'm saying is that we don't do ourselves any good from hiding behind the things that we think people will judge us for. We actually, in those moments, invite psychosomatic pain, anxiety, depression, a vast array of conditions, like I said, like irritable bowel and like migraines and things that people then feel owned by. They feel stuck. But it's because we feel judged to even speak our truth. And that's what I really try to help people understand.
Yeah, that's when I was reading about, there was one example you used with a couple that had come to you. And it was, to me, it was really interesting that, and I agree with you. I mean, judgment just stops everything. And it's really... that fear of being rejected, you know, for you know, expressing who we are, you know, who we are. And when in essence it's that we should never be fearful of who we are, you know what I mean? You know, the good and the bad and the ugly. I mean, you know, it's just, that's the way that it is. You know, that's the package each of us has, you know. That's one of the things where, you know, whenever I see people or hear people judging others, you know, it kind of just sets off a radar in me that, you know, these people just, you know, there's something within them that they feel it necessary to, you know, try and force their beliefs on someone else.
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's a huge catalyst in our society. And that's why I'm such a proponent of this deeper truth and what I try to explain in the book. Because if we could each, without pretense, without self-judgment, without anger or embarrassment or fear or shame or rage, if we could just carefully, gently look at ourselves. And it's kind of meditative, right? It's kind of like all the rage now, right? Everyone's saying yoga, meditation, self-connection. What I'm suggesting isn't dangerous because it's about taking out a journal, sharing yourself with yourself gently, and if you're not able, maybe with a therapist, and then it's okay. It's over. You know, I mean, I have a client who was raised in an evangelical family. She is in her 60s, late 60s. Her entire family is passed away because she had a very small family. Her family has gone. She said to me in tears, shaking, "I don't believe in God." And to see this woman suffer, and it's not about whether I believe in God or not or like whatever people believe. It was, she needed to say it. And I looked at her and I said, "It's okay. You believe in what you believe in. Let's talk about what you believe in." And by the end of the conversation, it was very clear to me that in a lot of people's definition, she does believe in God. She just couldn't come to terms with the way God was depicted in the abusive way she was brought up. But that secret, that dirty, ugly to her, nasty poison in her, was keeping her so stuck. And once I invited her to embrace it, to find her own spirituality, and then to thrive within that, this woman is a different person. And we all have that capacity.
Yeah, I agree. And boy, that's, you know, that's wonderful to be able to, you know, to have someone be able, I mean, for her to speak her truth openly,
right.
You know, and obviously, you know, it kind of makes you wonder if they all hadn't passed on, if she would have, you know, felt, you know, free enough to do that. But, you know,
probably
that's,
not.
I think, yeah, you know, and, you know, that was my thought, maybe not, but, you know, and I think maybe this is for, the reason I bring that up is for listeners out there, you know, don't wait till everybody in your circle passes on before you, you know, freely express yourself, you know, because.
Right,
what
people need to understand is it's not about, you know, being shunned and, like, ostracizing yourself from your community. All we need to do is be true to ourselves. It's such a fine line, but I don't think people understand it because the way we're raised does not give us permission to do so.
Yeah, very much. Now, you briefly said something about journal, and in your book you talk about journal speak. What is that about?
So when I was trying to figure out how to explain to people on kind of a, you know, more generic math level, so I'm not obviously talking directly to human A, B, or C, how they could connect with their truth, it came up, you know, in my thinking, I needed something to explain what this kind of journaling is about. Because this isn't, you know, "Dear diary, I had a bad day." You know, I needed to make people understand, and I explain it through my own experience, which we briefly touched on with my oldest daughter. But what journal speak means, and I have literally coined the term. I mean, I've literally trademarked it. It is so important to me that we are allowed to put pen to paper or finger to computer or even you know, mind to self while we're sitting on a bench somewhere where no one can see or hear or, you know, shame us, there is a deeper truth, and it's not, this is going to be so hard to understand, but read the book and you'll get it. Our deeper truth is not necessarily true. And people suffer lifetimes before they get this. And the best example I can have is my daughter. What I was able to admit, and I will tell you, I only admitted it to myself in that journal that day, but it was devastating. I hate my firstborn. I hate a baby. Like, it was horrible. But what journal speak has evolved into and what has taught me is that ability to follow the path down to my real truth, which is I don't hate her at all. I hate myself for the upbringing that caused me to judge a baby, but guess what? Next step, I don't even hate myself at all. And I actually don't even hate my parents. It brought me to a place where I could just be at peace with everybody did the best they could for when they were doing it. And that's, and I never want to say that that's something people need to feel until they're ready, because anger is an important emotion, and I never want people to swallow their feelings. But what I came to is my mom did her best, my dad did his best with what they were given in their childhoods. And I want to be more self-exploratory. I want to understand myself a little bit. So by allowing myself the concept of journal speak and writing into that darkness, I transcended right up into a much lighter truth, which was, I have no hate for this child. I just had a kind of messed up expectations. Now that I've laid them out, I feel completely free of them. I understand where they came from. Let's carry on. And that's what journal speak is about.
Wow, well, that's great. In that discussion, you also mentioned expectations, and expectations play such a role. You know, for me, I also find that it's kind of like a double-edged sword in a way. In one way, expectations sometimes motivate us to do certain things because we expect a positive result. I'm going to do this,
of course, yeah.
But then again, they can also hold us back. You know, it's like or disappoint us if what we expect does not unfold as you know what we had hoped. So I mean, it's one of those things where it's kind of like a damned if you do and damned if you don't in a way. But to me, it's one of those things that you just kind of have to try to manage. You know, and just accept, you know, and also recognize when it's holding you back, eliminate those, you know, when those that are motivating you, incorporate those.
Absolutely. No, that's really insightful. And I think that basically speaks to what I was just saying, which is, you know, we cannot forego expectations. In fact, oftentimes they're very adaptive. We need to expect the best, or we need to put our bar higher. But at the same time, I truthfully hate the word. Okay, sorry. I honestly believe that if each of us as human beings can have the bravery, and I say that with a capital B, I mean, this is not easy, to have the bravery to tackle our deeper truth, even if it's just between myself and a piece of paper, or, like I said, a therapist or a friend, trusted family member, someone who won't judge you, we can change our lives. We can change the way we react to things, because it's not about being perfect. It's about being true to yourself. You know, if you're true to yourself, my catchphrase of all of life is, be true to yourself and let your life unfold. There aren't so many difficult decisions. If every decision arises and you can look at it with this level of truth that, Robert, you and I are discussing, it's not such a difficult decision. You say, okay, I see option A, I see option B. Even though neither of them are ideal, option A speaks more to what's true for me and my family or my loved ones or my job or whatever. Here's my direction. And then you're at least honoring yourself. It's a huge deal for people once they get it.
Very much so. And, gosh, we're down to the last 5 minutes here. So what before we close, there's one thing that I noticed in your book that you have an appendix to something called the Truth Group Promise. Something tells me that that's kind of an important aspect to your book.
Yes, because my biggest challenge when I wrote this book is I can't be everyone's therapist. I can't be what I am for the, you know, number of people I see every week to every person that this book might reach. So I was trying to be creative and think about a way in which I could invite people to get more support, because in truth, support is key to anything we go through. It's the reason why, you know, God forbid, people who have cancer or, you know, any sort of AIDS, any sort of disease that feels insurmountable, we have support groups, right? So we can be in it with someone else. And so that's kind of what I was suggesting in this endeavor, thinking like maybe if a few people got together and read the book, they could feel safe getting together once a week, once a month, whatever, signing this promise so that they had some level just between them. Because I know this can't be an obvious patient-client confidentiality, nor should it be, that they could really kind of find support in one another. I mean, I'm really simply looking for people to feel better about themselves, and it seemed like that might be an option.
That sounds great. No, that's a it's a very good way to further the work of the book. You know, because when people are done reading it, you know, and, you know, maybe making some changes, it's always good to have that support group or someone else to bounce ideas off of, you know, and to keep it going, you know, to keep it going, because it is one of those things that's it's a process, and it's not just one you know, simple event that takes place. So, well, gosh, in the last few minutes here, are there any maybe any comments or any ideas you may want to share with the listeners before we close?
I guess the only thing I can say is that I invite every person who is listening or every person, and I don't know, do you tape this so people could hear it in the future or is it just
yes,
now?
Yes, this is it's available in archive. So in matter of fact, the 98% plus of the listeners are listen to it in the archive. So it gets downloaded even months afterwards. So, yes.
Oh, awesome, awesome. So I invite each of you to give yourself the gift of truth. And it's a line I say all the time, but it's so important. The life you save is your own. It's not about pleasing your dad, your mom, your boss, your husband, your wife, your kids. Live your life. You know, I mean, as spiritual as I am, this is what we get. You know, this is the way we walk the earth. This is what we get. And I want people to embrace that as wholly as possible. And I think that if they have the bravery to read the book, to look at themselves, to seek help in any way that they can seek support and love and connection in their lives, we change the world. That's the best we can do.
That's great. And by the way, one of my favorite listeners, Bree, she's a sweet, sweet lady, was listening, and she loved your honesty and straightforwardness, said it's a great show, said thank you to you, and we'll definitely be going back to the archives to re-listen to it. So anyway, just she's just one of those sweet ladies, and she speaks her truth, too. So I love this kind of expression. So thank you, Nicole. This has really been a fun conversation, and I appreciate our time together.
Absolutely. So do I.
Great. And just to let everyone know, Nicole is also on Facebook and Twitter. I have liked her page, and also I'm following her on Twitter. So those of you out there who are on those social platforms, definitely go ahead and follow Nicole there. So, again, thank you, Nicole, and I appreciate your time.
All right, Robert, will you take care as well?
Thank you. All right. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Nicole Sachs. She is author of The Meaning of Truth, Embrace Your Truth, Create Your Life. And again, you can find out all about Nicole, her book, her blog, and all of those the social media platforms by visiting her website, which is meaningoftruthbook.com. And again, there is a direct link to her website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BiteRadio.me. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.